So as you see, we'll be covering this evening verses 35 through 38. And this middle class today, 30 to 34. It's Achintya Veda, Abheda Tattva teaching. Compliments of Prahlad Maharaj, made simple. These are his appreciations of the non-difference of the Supreme Lord from the cosmic manifestation, and then in turn the difference, the mood of service, dasya, rasa, is inspired by this understanding, and now he's continuing that, giving a short synopsis of the process of creation coming from the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And in reviewing this section, one of the most outstanding appreciations was he's really clear who he's talking to. He's offering prayers to. He's seeing a half-man, half-lion form. He's very clear that this is Vishnu. And he's accepted a form. He's come, and the particular form that he has accepted is to uphold the word of Narada and Lord Brahma and fulfill the desire of the demigods. He's Bhaktivatsala, and he loves his devotees, and he upholds the word of his devotees. So, in the process of creation that he started describing, how the Supreme Lord is the source of everything, Brahma is an important player or aspect of the process of creation. And Brahma, in our sampradaya in particular, is the original preceptor. He's the one who receives transcendental knowledge first. So he's going to be describing in this section what Brahma saw. He climbed down the stem and of the lotus upon which he was born, couldn't find the end. And now we're going to hear what he did after that. He did tivra tapasya, intense austerity. In this case, it means his meditation on his mantra. But then he experienced the presence, Brahma, experienced the presence of Lord Vishnu in a subtle feature, all pervasively. It must have been a thrilling realization. And a metaphor is being used, a metaphor as both aroma and color spread throughout the earth, similarly the Supreme Lord pervades all creation. So we know that there's aroma and we know that there's color, but when you look at the earth, you don't necessarily see, just or detect, just like in the earth. Prabhupada's example, one of his examples, is a lemon tree. Dig up the earth around a lemon tree, and how much citric acid do you find? And the lemon tree produces pounds and pounds and so much quantity of citric acid. Where does it come from? Or you dig up the earth, and where a rose garden is, and do you smell rose scent? But according to Sankhya philosophy, within earth there's fragrance. Within water there's taste and so forth. So let's see how Prahlad deals with this. There's Lord Brahma seated on his lotus flower. And we'll just read the translation. Lord Brahma, who is celebrated as Atmayoni, or having been born without a mother, there he is, Atmayoni, Satu, Atmayonir, having was struck with wonder. That was, he looked, he couldn't find the source, because from the seed is now developed into the lotus. The seed can't be found, or the source of the lotus cannot be found. Thus he took shelter of the lotus flower. And when he had been purified after undergoing severe austerity, that's this tivra tapasya, a tapasa, kalena tivra tapasa, for a long time. Here Prabhupada has translated as for many hundreds of years, which leads to the logical question that people sometimes ask. He lived for 100 years. How did he do tapasya for hundreds of years, if he lived for 100 years? And then with the rest of it, with what he did. So, tivra, kalina tivra tapasa. He could see that the cause of all causes, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was spread throughout his own body and senses. Just as aroma, although very subtle, is perceived in the earth. He's searching for the cause of all causes, or the cause of his cause, the source of his existence. Where did I come from? Couldn't find it by empiric method. He engages in his meditation process. And then he experienced, he's saw the cause of all causes spread throughout his own body and senses, just as aroma is spread throughout the earth. So, Prabhupada's explanation is you don't see aroma in the earth, or even you don't smell aroma in the earth. And similarly, the Supreme Lord, by his different energies, spread throughout one's body and soul, although he cannot be seen. Now, we discussed this previously. I don't mind discussing it again. The all-pervasiveness of the Supreme Lord is in different aspects, through his energy, through Brahman, and through Paramatma feature. But the next verse is going to qualify that he saw the Purusha form. So the Purusha form is within every atom. He's in the heart of every living entity. So in that aspect, the Supreme Lord was perceived by Lord Brahma. Intelligent men, this is from the purport, see the Supreme Lord within the universe and within the atom by his different energies. Brahma became the most intelligent person by his tivra tapasya, austerity, and came to this realization. Now, this is before creation. He's going to have to create a universe, so he's understanding a lot of things about the universe before he creates the universe. The Supreme Lord is all-pervasive in each of the elements, and we've discussed that already. Here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's presentation. Makes it pretty simple. Brahma, astonished, sat on the lotus and purified by intense meditation upon your form, after some time saw you. You were situated within Brahma, just as the tanmatra fragrance is situated in earth. So tanmatra is a technical term. There's the senses and the objects of the senses. So the objects of the senses, the objects of the sense of smell is the fragrance. The sense of smell has its object, fragrance. And his commentary is short. He gave up searching and sat on the lotus. By meditating on you, Tivra Tapasa, he saw you situated in his body, Atmani, just as fragrance, which is the cause, is situated in the earth, which is the effect. So that from the subtle comes the gross. So fragrance is within the earth, cause and effect. Next. Specifically, this verse says that Brahma saw this particular Mahapurusha form. So, what's the Mahapurusha? Or what are the Purusha avatars? According to the Bhagavatam, chapter 3 of Canto 1, they're Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Shiradakshay Vishnu. Those are the Vishnu forms for the purpose of creation, or the Purusha avatars. So, the verse speaks of, Mahapurusha. Mahapurusha. Drishtva Mahapurusha. He saw the form of Vishnu. And the description of his seeing the form of Vishnu is very similar to the Purusha Sukta prayers. What's that? Purusha Sukta prayers. It's in the Rig Veda. And it's what the demigods recited when they went to the shore of the Milk Ocean to propitiate or appeal to Lord Vishnu, please descend on earth on behalf of Mother Earth in the form of a cow. So these Purusha Sukta prayers, they're standard. There's Vedic Rig Veda prayers that are addressing the Purusha avatars. And what we're hearing is he saw them. And when he saw them, the description is he could see you possessing thousands and thousands of faces, feet, heads, hands, thighs, noses, ears, and eyes, which sounds a little bit like the universal form. But it can be a description of the universal form. But in this case, it's specific. He saw the Mahapurusha form. We'll see more about this in just a minute. You are very nicely dressed, being decorated and bedecked with various varieties of ornaments and weapons. Seeing you in the form of Lord Vishnu, your symptoms and form being transcendental. So that's not the universal form. Your legs extending from the lower planets. Sounds like the universal form, but it's the form of Vishnu. Lord Brahma achieved transcendental bliss. So there's this lively discussion in the commentaries about this Maya, Mayam. And especially it's important for our commentators to not allow the misreading that says the form of the Lord is Maya. But because impersonalists like that one. So this Purusha Sukta, it's found elsewhere in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the same. It begins Sahasra Shirsha Purusha, Sahasraksha, Sahasrapat. And Sahasra, thousands. Sahasra Shirsha, thousands of heads, thousands of eyes, thousands of feet. Because his hands and his legs are everywhere, because he's everywhere. Because he's manifest everywhere in the all-pervasive super soul. Now, those that are impersonalists, they understand this and read it a different way. But these are prayers that Vaishnavas recite, the Purusha Sukta prayers, because it's glorifying Lord Vishnu. Here's the demigods at the shore of the milk ocean offering these Rig Veda Purusha prayers to the Purusha. So what we're hearing from Prahlad is that Brahma saw Vishnu. Now remember, he's speaking to Lord Nrisingadev, so he understands Lord Nrisingadev is Vishnu. Vishnu is Lord Nrisingadev. You're Lord Vishnu. You're the source of all these parts of the cosmic manifestation. There's the difference and then there's the non-difference. Or there's the non-difference and there's the difference. And he's 6 years old. He's a pretty smart kid. Didn't even go to school yet. But he heard from Narada. Of course, he was in the womb. He's a little handicapped, but he heard. Oh. Arjuna, who also saw the Lord, told the Lord, this is 10th chapter, right after the Chaturshloki verses, where the Lord reveals, I'm the source of everything, Param Brahm Paramam Bhavan, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam. You're the Purusha. You are the Supreme Brahman, the ultimate, the Supreme Abode, the Purifier, the Absolute Truth, and the Eternal Divine Person, Parama Purusha, the Supreme Form. Purusham Shashvatam, he is everlastingly the Supreme Enjoyer. So Arjuna understood, Brahma understood, little Prahlad, he understood. And he understood by dint of this spiritual knowledge. He understood that Brahma understood by dint of this maya mayam. As Prabhupada explains it in the purport that way. And our acharyas, Prabhupada said, this maya mayam does not mean he has a material form. Krishna says, people that think that way, they're fools, mudhas. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment is, Brahma saw the Mahapurusha, a form of knowledge and bliss, since it was made of maya mayam, eternal energy arising from his swarup. His swarup, shakti, spiritual form, spiritual potency manifesting this Purusha form. And once again, whoops, the Lord's form should not be taken to mean illusion. And because of this spiritual knowledge and spiritual bliss, both, maya mayam, Prabhupada remarks that the original form of Krishna, he saw the four-armed form. The two-armed form, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 11:52, very difficult to behold. And when one does behold it, it provides the perfect transcendental bliss. And so the concluding remark in the purport is this one. Lord Brahma saw that as aromas and colors spread throughout the earth, the Supreme Personality God, it pervades the cosmic manifestation in a subtle form. Subtle meaning, in this case, is spiritual form. Prahlad is citing Brahma having these realizations, indicating, though I, Prahlad, didn't have these realizations, Brahma is the authority that I accept, and so you are all pervasive. And by your mercy, you're before me in this form so that I can serve you and worship you. And then the next little section, is his appearance is to give protection. It's, he already cited that, that Lord Nrsingadev came to create fearlessness for the everyone, for, particularly for his devotees. So now he's going to mention this name, Hayagriva. Hayagriva is a form that gave protect very beginning of creation. We discussed it, and we'll discuss it again. When Madhu and Kaitava, two demons, there was demons really early on in creation, because that's part of creation, they stole the Vedas from Brahma. It was in the form of Brahma's breathing he was taking. From his breathing, they stole the Vedas. And so he went to Vishnu, help! They stole the Vedas. So Vishnu came and finished them, Madhu and Kaitava, and then he delivered the Vedas back to Brahma. And he delivered the Vedas through a horse head. Remember? Sahasra Shirsha. Haya indicates that he has a horse's head. There he is. Hayagriva. With the symbols of Vishnu. So as Hayagriva looks a little unusual, and Lord Nrsingadev looks a little unusual, but there, Lord Vishnu, he's very clear. And as Hayagriva appeared to give protection to Brahma, there he is, killing Madhu and Kaitava, who are hiding in a conch shell. He then delivered the Vedas to Lord Brahma through a horse's head. Therefore, this name given to him, Hayagriva. So here's the translation of the verse. My dear Lord, when you appeared as Hayagriva with the head of a horse, you killed two demons known as Madhu and Kaitava, who were full of the modes of passion and ignorance. Then you delivered the Vedic knowledge to Lord Brahma. For this reason, all the great saints accept your forms as transcendental, untinged by material qualities. So he appears for protection, and he and his form are not different, and he and his form are transcendental. But being attached to the transcendental, you become transcendentalized or spiritualized. Prabhupada writes in the dental and is always ready to kill the demons. By culturing the mode of goodness, one can understand the position of the transcendental Lord and how the Lord is always prepared to remove all obstacles on the path of understanding him. Well, and it's actually from the position of goodness, one can more easily enter into the position of transcendence through devotional service, because it's through devotional service that he can be understood. So, Ram, Griva, killing Madhu and Kaitava, another image. And Krishna subduing the Kaliya demon or Kaliya serpent. It's subduing the demons and benefiting the devotees, because Krishna wanted that the lake, which was a lake formed by the river Jamuna, poisonous lake in Vrindavan, and the poisonous lake was due to Kaliya, so he wanted to tell Kaliya get lost. But he did it in a wonderful leela. And Kaliya took off. And the lake became then nice. And the last verse for this evening is this one. Text 38. Describing the transcendental nature of the relationship between the devotees and the Lord. We already heard some examples of this, if you remember, the diamond and the gold ring, That was a nice example. So, here, reference is being made by Prahlad in an important verse, actually, at Caitanya Mahaprabhu as the Channa Avatar. We've heard that term, and where it comes from is Prahlad. Very interesting. Channa is covered. Lord Caitanya appears in Kali Yuga as the hidden avatar, Channa Avatar. And what Prahlad says in this verse is, your appearance in Kali Yuga is hidden. You don't disclose that you are Vishnu, although you're Vishnu. And therefore, you're called Triyuga, because in Kali Yuga, you're hidden. You're Channa Avatar. It's the scriptural reference for our understanding that Lord Chaitanya appears in this age of Kali. There's others that are naturally cited in the purport. Kalu. And he's known as Triyuga. Abhavas Triyogo. Triyugo ta sa tum. In this way, my Lord, you appear in various incarnations as a human, an animal, a great saint, a demigod, a fish, or a tortoise, thus maintaining the entire creation in different planetary systems and killing the demoniac principles. This line here, Dharmam Mahapurusha. Remember, he saw the Mahapurusha. Dharmam Mahapurusha Pashi Yuganuvritam. According to the age, O my Lord, you protect the principles of religion. It's something he does in every age. Dharma Sangh Sthapanartaya, but it's appropriate for the age. And in Kali Yuga, in the age of Kali, however, you do not assert yourself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore you're known as Triyuga, or the Lord who appears in three yugas. An important scriptural reference to take note of in case sometime in the future you meet somebody who says, tisk tisk, shame shame, there's no avatar in the age of Kali. Of course, there's other references in the Bhagavatam that are favored by our acharyas. Krishna Varnam Trisha Krishnam Sangopangashta Parshadam Yagyai Sankirtanam. So this is in a section of the Bhagavatam where the avatars, the Yuga avatars, are being described. So this is for Kali Yuga, and the Yuga avatar is Krishna Varnam, where the Supreme Lord is in the Varna of Krishna, but his complexion is not blackish. Tvasya Krishnam. And he Sangha, Parshada, and Astra, they appear with him. But he doesn't come with the Astras of Lord Vishnu, he comes with Mridanga and Kartals. And his associates, those are his Astras. And they assist him in not, as it was said previously, not killing the demons, but killing demoniac mentality, or relieving the demoniac mentality by replacing it with devotional mentality. And yajanti hi sumedasa, sumedasa, those who have sufficient intelligence, they worship the Supreme Lord in this way by Sankirtan. One who tries to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the medium of Sankirtan movement knows everything perfectly. He is Sumedhas, a person with substantial intelligence. So this term, Triyuga, this is our last slide. This term Triyuga comes in Chaitanya Charitamrita in relation to Lord Chaitanya's coming to Jagannath Puri. And when he reaches Jagannath Puri, there's a really wonderful pastime. He enters alone, so a leela, so that he can enter alone, is arranged. And the leela is arranged this way. Lord Chaitanya wants to go visit some temples on the way between Bhubaneswara and Puri, which is heading south, and it's on the other side of the Banganadi River. So he gives his danda to Lord Nityananda and says, you hold on to this while I go cross the river and go visit the temples and I'll come back. So he goes to visit the temples and he comes back, and when he comes back, Nityananda has broken his danda. And the way it's described in Chaitanya Bhagavat is really sweet. He's holding the danda and having a conversation with the danda and says, how impertinent. My Lord and Master, he's the Lord of everything, and you're accompanying him as if he's a renunciate? Nonsense. And breaks the danda and throws the danda in the river. Just too much. He wants to see Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Lord, not as a renunciate, undergoing austerities, carrying a danda. So when Lord Chaitanya comes back, he asks, where's my danda? They continue, they get as far as the Naratala Bridge. He says, okay, where's my danda? Well, you were in a swoon of ecstasy and you fell on the danda and it broke, and so I threw it in the river. So I didn't do my service very well. You can punish me as you like. And, of course, it's Leela. And Lord Chaitanya said, I'm a sannyasi. I have no possessions other than my kamandalu and my danda, and I trust that I'm with you, and you broke my danda? You know, I don't want to travel with you anymore. So you can go to Puri, and the other devotees, you can go to Puri ahead of me, and I'll stay here. Or I'll go ahead and go alone and you stay here. You decide. But I'm not traveling with you guys anymore. He didn't say guys. And they said, no. You shouldn't be delayed. You go forward. And it was, the pretext was so he could enter the temple alone. And so he entered the temple alone. And when he entered the temple alone, he saw Lord Jagannath. And when he saw Lord Jagannath, he saw Krishna, naturally. And so he ran like the wind with his arms outstretched to embrace Krishna, and he fainted on the temple room floor in a swoon of ecstatic love. The guards didn't know who this fellow was, and they saw somebody collapsing on the floor, and they got their sticks and were going to chase him out of the temple room. And just at that time, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya came. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is the brilliant scholar in the land, not just in Puri or the kingdom of King Pratapa, but he's famous, the most brilliant scholar. And he just, providential arrangement, he happened to walk in at the same time, saw this sannyasi on the floor of the temple room, and the guards ready to whack him. And he said, stop. This is a sannyasi. Please make the arrangement. Bring him to my home. So the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is not so far. It's convenient distance from the Jagannath temple. So Lord Chaitanya was brought there. It's a nice story. And so there he is, in trance, and super scholar Sarvabhaumadacharya wanted to test him. Is he faking? Is it real or genuine? So he knew how to do it. Here's how he did it. He took a cotton ball, took some little fibers from the cotton, and held it by his nostrils, because if he was faking, then he'd just be breathing normally. And if he was in trance, his life airs would be suspended. His life airs were suspended. Slight, but not normal breathing. So he knew this was the real deal. And even particularly, he could understand he's in this Mahabhava state that is even otherworldly. So his scholarship, he knew this is not just the real deal. This is the personality. He's the supreme. But he couldn't. He had read too many Shankaracharya's books. He couldn't make that connection. So he's still, Mahaprabhu's in trance. The associates, headed by Nityananda, they reach the temple. They ask, where's this young sannyasi? Oh, he was taken to the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. They went to the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And keeping it shorter, they knew what to do. They had kirtan. And loud kirtan and loud kirtan, and Lord Chaitanya came to external consciousness from his state of trance. And at that time, so the assembly grows by one more, that is, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had a sister, and his sister was married to Gopinathacharya. And Gopinathacharya had previously lived in Navadvipa, and he knew Lord Chaitanya before he had taken sannyas. He knew the whole situation of all the devotees in Navadvipa. So Gopinathacharya said, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And some other things happened. Lord Chaitanya, he said, I suggest you don't enter the Jagannath temple alone from now on. You go with me, and I'll protect you. So everything will be nice. You won't get whacked again next time you go into ecstasy. So some agreement was made, and then Lord Chaitanya and his associates went to the temple, and so he was going to arrange prasad, Jagannath prasad, for the whole entourage with Lord Chaitanya. Gopinathacharya started asking, who is this sannyasi? He's from Navadvipa. Oh, who is his father? His father is Purandara Mishra, or Jagannath Mishra, and his grandfather is Nilambar Chakravarti. That's the maternal grandmother, or Mother Sachi's father, was known by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's father. Oh, my father and his maternal grandmother were best friends, and my father had great appreciation for Purandara Mishra, and this is his son. If you're meeting somebody and, hey, where are you from? I'm from El Paso, Texas. Oh, I'm from El Paso, Texas. I'm from Delhi. Oh, I'm from Delhi. What part of Delhi are you from? Or, Oh, it's a family affection started going, wow. So he's thinking of in terms of family, but not in terms of transcendental. And so he started asking, what order of sannyas is he? Oh, he's from the Bharati Sampradaya. Keshava Bharati was his sannyas guru. Oh, if he wants, I can give him a better status as a sannyasi, because I know all the mantras, and although I'm a householder, I know all the rituals, and I can fix him up with a better order of sannyas. Gopinath said, stop this. He's not just an ordinary person. You've already tested him. You know he's not an ordinary person. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, oh, my dear brother-in-law, you know the scriptures, and in this age of Kali, there is no form of the Lord, therefore his name is Tri-Yuga. So please consider, you're saying he's a personality Godhead in the age of Kali. So they have this disagreement. Brother-in-laws, even at the time of Mahaprabhu, had disagreements. And he quoted, Gopinathacharya quoted a number of things, including this Varnam Tusha Krishna verse, and saying that obviously there is a yuga avatar, there may be no lila avatar, but there's a yuga avatar. There must be a yuga avatar. You're saying there's no avatar in Kali Yuga. But at least the argument he gave is different than what Prahlad is saying in this verse. But there's no lila avatar in Kali Yuga, but there's a yuga avatar. And gives references. But what's the use? You're just a dry logician. He's like, doesn't speak nicely to his brother-in-law. Because he's insulted Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he's scripturally very strong, and it's his brother-in-law. He's not like a fellow on the street. So he's letting him have it. You will not recognize him as the personality of Godhead until you receive some mercy from him. Because the associates of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya were right there listening. They said, oh, we establish things by reason and logic, and then we can understand what's what. And you can't understand through reason and logic the absolute truth. That's not how he's understood. He's understood through devotion. Only when you get even a drop of mercy from Mahaprabhu, then you'll understand. And otherwise, you can't understand. Your heart is dry. Dry logician. Dry like a dry oil cake. I don't know what a dry oil cake is, but it must be really dry. And he got some mercy. And then he could understand. Same as we're hearing. He got some mercy. In this case, from Lord Chaitanya himself. He got Lord Chaitanya's mercy, and then he could understand. And then Lord Chaitanya revealed his Sadbhuj form, his six-armed form. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya fainted. He says, two hands, bow and arrow, Lord Ramachandra, two hands, Krishna playing his flute, two hands, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu holding his danda and kamandalu, the paraphernalia of a sannyasi. He understood. He got mercy. He understood. He saw. He fainted. And then he composed wonderful verses in glorification of Lord Chaitanya. Some other things happened after that. But some exchange with his brother-in-law, and his brother-in-law, when his brother-in-law saw, without the detail, he saw that the devotion, the transformation that had taken place in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he said, I knew it. You got some mercy from Mahaprabhu, and now you understand that he's the Supreme Lord. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said very humbly, it's because of your benediction that I would receive his mercy. I got his mercy. Because you're dear to Lord Chaitanya, therefore I got his mercy. So it's from you that I got his mercy that now I can understand. That this is our way of spiritual life. We should be eager to receive mercy. And like Prahlad, he received mercy. And look at the realization. It's six-year-old boy is having. But he wants more mercy and more association and more instruction and always be in that position, hankering at least, whether Narada is right there by his side or he's at Narada's feet and Narada's speaking to him or not, hankering for that association and remaining in the service of the instructions that he received from Narada. So at the end of this, before we part, we're going to hear Lord's instructions to Prahlad. Actually, we heard it the first morning. Rule, become king for the duration of one manu, and teach bhakti by your words and by your actions. And then you come to me in the spiritual world. So Prahlad is a Vaikuntha resident. That's his mood, awe and reverence, and deep knowledge from bhakti, not from going to school, from bhakti, not from reading books, because he was too little. He had books to read, he could read books, but it's a different yuga. He just hears. And from hearing, it went in. So now he has all this realization by the mercy of Narada Muni. Okay, so that's our verses for this evening. Tomorrow, we're going to have to cover a lot of territory. As I mentioned, it was a struggle to sort out how to divide up all these verses. But particularly this is heads up, don't have a big breakfast tomorrow, because we're going to cover a lot of verses after breakfast. And mainly the prayers end before this evening, and the evening is then Lord Nrisimhadev speaking, and it's not long purports, not a lot of explanation. It's even before speaking it that Nrisimhadev wants to give benediction to Prahlad. Prahlad senses it, and we'll hear about, he's reluctant to take any benediction. That's the only thing he wants. We'll hear some other things. So we're nearly finished. Any comments or questions? In the back? He has to put the power on. Go ahead, now.
There was a slide on Maya Mayam, which says spiritual knowledge.
Yes.
I was kind of lost how that is connected to the point that form of the Lord is not material.
Well, it's not. It's it's more about Abhideya. The form of the Lord is a form of, some of the acharyas have commented that it's spiritual knowledge. That's what Prabhupada presents in his purport. Other acharyas speak of it as bliss, knowledge and bliss. The Lord is a form of knowledge and bliss, and reveals his form through the agency of his internal potency. But that's the connection. The form of the Lord is transcendental. It's beyond the modes of nature and of the spiritual energy. Bliss and knowledge, of course, eternal bliss and knowledge. And that's how it's revealed, and that's the medium that one has to engage in to approach and realize the form. That's the process of bhakti, not otherwise. Does that help?
So is that the term Prahlad Maharaj is using to connect that the Lord's form is not material, or is it?
Yes. He has, remember the context of the whole section. He's gone twice through Achintya, Beda, and Abheda. And he starts with the Abheda, and then he goes to the Beda. And that's the position of the cosmic manifestation with the Lord. And the Lord's form is fully spiritual. He's not in this world of duality. He's absolutely pure. And so maya mayam, it's a form that's of bliss and knowledge. So that's the connection. That's the connection. The things of this world are not of bliss and knowledge. He's not attracted to them. They're all temporary, limited, and imperfect. And the form of the Lord is what he's attracted to. He wants to be in service.
Guru Maharaj, this whole process of creation appears multiple times in Srimad Bhagavatam. And
yes.
I find myself getting lost reading
yes.
all the philosophy. What is the proper mode to approach the subject matter?
Patiently. The detail, it's not like you can't go back to Godhead if you can't figure it all out. So that's not the requirement. We want to understand because it's presented again and again. There's a reason why it's presented again and again. And one of those reasons is not just sentiment, but there's a science to the connection of all things with the Source. Fundamentalist creationists go on tour and do their Bible thumping thing saying that God is the source of everything. And the scientists cut them to shreds because, you know, how do you explain this? How do you explain that? And it's just the words of the Genesis of the Old Testament, and that's it. It's faith that's not founded in knowledge. And the Bhagavatam is providing us knowledge nourishes that faith. How do you explain this? How do you explain that? The push and the pull, the cause and the effect of everything. It's there. And it's just, because it's there doesn't prove it's right, but it's verifiable through experimental method. Or at least it's non-falsifiable by experimental method. You know, for you and for many of the people in the room, I'm not interested in falsifying any of this, you know, but it's the basis. It's for persons who have that propensity, and it, you know, it's making the connection of all things with the Source, and how does it work? Just like one of the questions earlier, this is a devotee, it's not a, you know, material scientist saying, if the Lord is all spiritual, how does something material come from something that's all spiritual? I mean, it's a very realistic, reasonable question. How do you explain that? So, and then more details and more details and more details. Some people are inclined. Look at the, you know, the occupations of some of the people in this room. It's like IT people. It's all cause and effect stuff. And engineers and, you know what I mean. So persons have that kind of training and that kind of brain, and it's there in the Vedas. It's not just faith. Close your eyes and repeat after me. God is the source of everything. I believe. God is the source of everything. Everything is connected to Him. I believe. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is kind of a curveball, a little bit.
Curveball, okay.
So this supreme form, Parama Purusha, as well as other forms of Krishna, it's really a question about authority and authentication. Like, if these forms are so superior, then probably a lot of people haven't seen them. So how are they depicting him?
How are they? What's
like illustrating how Krishna looks in these supreme forms. If people haven't really seen them, it's really a question of authority and authentication.
Authenticity.
Yeah, authenticity and authority. It really bothers me. The question bothers me. Like, am I really looking at
God? Does it bother you on a personal level, or it bothers you on the level of how do I explain this to other people?
No, personally. Like, am I really seeing Krishna for... Is this really how he looks, or is this how someone thinks he looks through reading? You know, like, how do you validate if what we're seeing is really what it is? Or like the skin, yeah, we have that down pat, right? But like the features and everything, how do these people know? Is there an authentication?
I want to be sure I've understood your question before I just say blah blah. So, are you seeking? Is your question probing how do these people know, or are you probing how do I know that what's being described about what these people have experienced is what those people experience?
No, not the description, but the actual images that like you show. These images.
The artists?
Yes.
How do we know the artists got it right?
The artists that are
okay.
Yeah, not the description, not the words.
Ah.
More so the illustrations.
Okay. Tell a little Prabhupada story. I heard this directly from Murli Dhar, who was fantastic artist, made some award-winning paintings when he was just painting on his own. But in the early stages, he was part of an assembly line. I mean, they worked collaboratively. Anyway, he, being involved in amongst the original artists, wanted to know. He shared this with me. I mean, he's about 6'5", and very intense features, very serious person, big eyebrows, and he's the one that always played Lord of Sringadev, or like real intense, quiet but intense kind of, that was his persona, and fabulous artist. So the picture of the person helps convey the hearing this, what I heard from him. He wanted to know from Prabhupada, what does Krishna really look like? Because I'm supposed to paint paintings of Krishna. So he gathered some paintings of Krishna, some posters, and does Krishna look like this, and does it more like that, and what does Krishna look like? Kind of question. And Prabhupada's answer was very simple. Krishna is wearing a flute. Krishna's with the peacock feather, he's with the cows, there's the river Jamuna, he has eyes like a lotus petal, the complexion is like a monsoon cloud. That's what Krishna looked like. And he wasn't satisfied. Yeah, but does he look like this, or does he look like that, or does he look like that? So then he didn't get satisfied, so then he showed, or I don't remember if he said or showed. Supposing a child makes a little stick picture. There's Krishna, and Krishna's holding a flute, and there's his peacock feather, and there's the cows and the river Jamuna. He said, that's also Krishna. And Prabhupada didn't explain further. No. Is that what Krishna looked like? I mean, because that's what his question was, which is what your question is. How do we know what Krishna looked like from these people that are the artists? And in part, it's inspiration. That, as bhakti matures, then the inspiration gets refined. I'll give another artist's story. One of the early artists was requested by Prabhupada to make a painting of Narada Muni. So she made Narada Muni looking like a muscle man. And Prabhupada saw the painting and he laughed and he said, he's not a meat eater, his arms are slender. And the artist said, well, I wanted people to be attracted to Narada Muni, and so I made him muscle-bound. People are attracted to that. Men that are muscle-bound are, wow, attractive guy. So he said that's the attraction is his devotion. So if you paint with devotion and portray his devotion through your painting. There's his vina, and he's wearing saffron, and he has longish hair, and that's Narada. So it's as far as the artist's depiction is concerned, there's flexibility. The artist's inspiration is at least from what Prabhupada described, within parameters, within limits, their inspiration. But the elements, darkest like a rain cloud, and eyes, and threefold bending form, and peacock feather, and flute, and his devotees with him. Okay, another way of answering your question is which of the deities of Krishna looks most like Krishna? And they're all Krishna. They're all. And then, you know, could you ask those people to. Or, you know, sometimes I see deities of Krishna are black and some deities of Krishna are white. Which is it? White marble, black marble. They're both Krishna. Yes?
Guru Maharaj, this question is from the afternoon class session 2, or morning class session 2. You said that Krishna says that my mind takes care of all the living entities.
Well, and it was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was commenting or explaining that's what is being said. So go ahead.
And then that by Krishna's willing, everything is performed so perfectly that one cannot imagine how it's been done. So I was thinking that whenever I'm in a complex situation where I have to make choices in life, I sometimes pray to the Lord that please reveal to me what is your will. And as if like Krishna has already taken care of that particular situation, but I'm praying to that he reveals his will for me and what is the path that he has chosen. So I come up with a self-doubt that really Krishna has kind of taken care of the choice or has already thought about what's best for me. And the second doubt comes that if yes, he has a chosen path for me, then am I covered just by praying him and that path will be revealed to me? Like I'm talking about like specifics and details. Of choices that I have to make in some situations.
You're a mother. Mothers have children. You have children. When you're having some exchange with your children, is there a right answer that you're expecting from them and you hope that they come up with the right answer when there's a choice that they have to make?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Well, maybe there are some boundaries that you don't want them to go over there, but it's not, there's one answer, and if they don't get the right answer, you're going to be a disappointed mom. It's what you would be interested in is, I mean, speaking in broad terms, that it's wholesome and it's going to lead them to a healthy life and come closer to pleasing Krishna, kind of, amongst so many different choices. But going in that direction, if the question you're asking is there already Krishna wants me to do this and I just have to sort it out to do what Krishna wants out of the multitude of possibilities and get a score on Krishna's scorecard. Free will is free will. And exercising free will within the range of what's pleasing to Krishna is what Krishna wants. Our love and devotion. It's not a predetermined outcome and you just, pray to Krishna, what is it? It's more directional. And there's varieties of directional. And we take responsibility. Krishna isn't taking responsibility. We're taking responsibility for the choices. Now, there's many factors for you or any one of us in making decisions to consider. But I don't think there's like a right choice versus so many wrong choices. I think there's many right choices versus many wrong choices or gray, not so good choices.
So, Mara, sometimes there are like two or three choices which looks that all of them are towards like taking me or the children towards Krishna, but one has to choose.
I wrote it maybe 40 years ago. I wrote a little essay on making decisions. And one of the rules in making decisions, this is the language of the essay was a little more articulate, but if we're not clear, we can pause. But at some point, we have to do something because indecision is another decision. So we have to make decisions, and there's multiple choices, and we're not sure which of the multiple choices would be more appropriate or pleasing to Krishna or, the right thing to do. We're not really sure. But we have to make a decision at some point and thought some things. So, pray, and as best you can understand, you are not like fully clear, but I'm going to take a step. And then that leads to the next step and leads to the next step. And I'm going to, leave my radar screen wide open for Krishna to give me a signal that says that's not the right direction to go in. There's consequences that you're not aware of, and you should be, So I'm waiting for Krishna's indication going down a certain path of the decision to see that's not really what I should be doing. And then at some point in time, you've gone too far, you really can't go back and make another decision. So I accept responsibility for that. And then I can, from that place that I now find myself, I can realign myself in another set of decision-making steps to go to the, a better place for that decision-making. But all the while, the question is what is pleasing to you, not which is the right choice to make necessarily. Because there may be multiple right choices. And my experience is with everything in this world, there's plus and minus. You can go nuts weighing out the pluses and minuses forever and not making decisions. So with everything, there's going to be some minuses along with the pluses. But so the real important thing is not how many pluses, minuses, but what's pleasing to Krishna. And if something is pleasing to Krishna, you accept the minuses along with the pluses for the sake of pleasing Krishna. As best you can. Seek guidance from others and prayer and all those things. And be prepared to get some indication from Krishna as you move forward that wasn't such a good choice. But you made it with full wish to make it the right choice, pleasing to Krishna. You do that conscientious work as you're going along in your choice-making, decision-making parts of your life. And then refine. Constant refinement of getting out your compass and make sure we're heading in the right direction. Realigning again and again. Micro, but more for the internal purpose than it is for the actual act and the outcome of the act or the choice. When bhakti is alert, intelligence will be there. Yena mamo biyantite. How to go to Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj.
I don't know, right there. There's...
Just to follow up on her question, Gurmanj. When you said about signals, right, could you please elaborate and explain what those signals from Krishna means?
What does signals from Krishna mean?
Because you were just explaining, right?
Well, it can mean lots of things. And, different things for different people, I'm sure. I'm trying to think of some practical examples, and all that's coming to mind is unintended consequences, specifically how this may impact another person. Our social responsibilities in the lives of others and how others will be impacted in unintentional ways by decisions we make. And it can be, the close circle around us or the concentric circles out. When we're trying to do the right thing, trying to make right choices, we don't have necessarily complete information. And so, but we have to, decisions have to be made at a certain point in time and choices have to be made. So, and this is one category, at least, where the devotional service and the practical activities of service of others is being negatively impacted in ways that I didn't consider when I was making this good intentioned choice, and that can be an indicator that there wasn't a good choice. Not necessarily that the intention was bad, but the choice wasn't right. Now I have to reconsider. That's one indication. It's too variegated, to say... could you explain more? What are indicators from Krishna that the choice wasn't the right choice or the best choice? Life is very complicated.
And it's hard to read the signals too, right?
Because when we're doing service, we're serving Krishna, and serving Krishna means we're serving the devotees of Krishna. And that way we're serving Krishna. So Our life is a life of service. We're serving Krishna, and we're serving Krishnas. And then, you know, there's persons outside of Krishna's devotees that could become Krishna's devotees if we make our choices wiser. Anyway, is this part of maturing? Meanwhile, we're not in the not yet mature stage. We still have to make choices. We still have to act. Okay. Yes, over here.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. While we say the Purusha Sukta prayers, it's really difficult for me to understand the mood in which, you know, you really perform or, you know, say the prayers.
Sometimes when people speak, I can understand everything that they're saying. And sometimes when people speak, I get about 30% or 50%. I'm getting about 30 to 50%. Did you try again? I'm sorry.
So we say a lot of prayers.
We say a lot of prayers.
Like, for example, you know, we have Mangalarti prayers.
Mangalarti
prayers. And we have Brahma Samhita prayers.
Yes.
But the Purusha Sukta prayers, the mood is really different.
Yes.
It's really hard for me to, you know, understand or, you know, shift gears. If you're saying that prayers and then you say Brahma Samhita prayers and then you say Guru Vashtaka prayers, you know, it's really hard to say those prayers, you know, in a sequence.
Well, take the ones, I mean, we have our standard, you know, I guess you could say like it or not, but we have our standard Mangalarti Guru Puja prayers, Tulsi Puja prayers. We have our standard prayers. So those are not so optional. Then the others are, you may have more liking and less liking for other ones. So that's fine.
Even Prabhupada Maharaj, it looks like he's saying these things like, you know, you have several heads and eyes. And, so this is just a precursor for what he's going to express.
No. Here's my understanding. As I was reading that, here's one of the things that came. Bhagavatam is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And Vedanta Sutra is the essence of all the Vedas. So there's portions of the Vedas, like the Rig Veda portion of the Vedas, for the Bhagavatam is giving a commentary on that. In this case, this is how I was taking it. Prahlad is giving us the explanation of how to properly view the Purusha Sukta prayers through his prayer to Lord Nrisimhadev. It's Lord Vishnu. And he's saying it in, you know, in light of, here's what Brahma saw when he saw Lord Vishnu, and he says, matches the Purusha Sukta prayers, and here's Lord Brahma. And he's, you know, he's a worshiper of Bhagavan. He's a Krishna Bhakta. That's how I took it. Not otherwise. I mean, I, like you, when I read those, you know, thousands of heads and, you know, language is to help the reciter of those prayers to understand he's all pervasive, and frankly, it gives people who are impersonalists the chance to whitewash the whole thing and say, how can you have a person with many hands and faces? It's the impersonal within. God is saying his form is all spiritual. I mean, just like this question that Krishna Priya was asking. His form is all spiritual. So it's not the material cosmic manifestation, Vishwarup, that he saw. Or, anyway, that Purusha Sukta is Lord Vishnu. No, because we're Vaishnavas, or specifically we're Gaudiya Vaishnavas, but because we're Vaishnavas, we're hearing these explanations of things that out there in Vedic land, people have a very, very different understanding than we have. So Prahlad is offering the Vaishnava understanding of those things. It's the commentary. So we don't get it wrong. We get it right. We can connect that with the absolute truth correctly.
Thank you very much.
Last question over here.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, in terms of our decision making, you mentioned the decisions could have both positive and negative. So my question is, is it okay to take astrological consultation to get the sense of directions when making decisions?
Yeah. Please. More than okay. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna. Two announcements. We will